We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
And by the way, I want to release this. I think I just release it immediately, too. And by the way, we are recording.
Sure.
Starting now.
Lindsay does want to listen to it.
Oh, you need to, it needs to be vetted a little bit? Okay. All yeah. right. Okay. Okay. We could. I'll send it.
But then we can certainly release it as a impromptu.
As an impromptu. Okay. Yeah. You got it. All right. So we're going to skip all the background and everything. And I will just start by saying that you were here a month ago or so. And if you are finding this episode and somehow listening to this episode before listening to that episode, I would highly suggest go back, listen to that episode first. It was just four or five episodes ago. Go back, listen to that first. It's going to provide a lot of context because we're not going to go back and necessarily re-explain things that we're already talking yep. about. So you might be a little lost if this is the first thing you're listening to with me and Jason. Go back and listen to that. Second thing I want to say is something that I was dying to tell people, but now I think I can say this. And again, you just tell me, or Lindsay will tell me later. That podcast you and I did had 18 minutes chopped out of it.
Yeah.
The 18 minutes was mostly spent on two topics, one of which I know we're going to talk about, one of which you tell me if we're yeah. talking about it or not, but one of which was that you had some major health issues yeah. in the middle of that whole story.
Yes.
The other thing that we talked a lot about was passing some judgment on the bank's decision to deliver you your notice on December 23rd. And we were, there were some opinions about yes. whether or not that was cool.
I mean, some of it, Paula, you just get so comfortable talking to you that you forget there's a microphone in your hand. And all of a sudden you go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I should be careful what I say publicly. So we can certainly talk about the health stuff. I think
we'll
just have to say that folks should remember that banks have to be very austere partners. And while they are there in the good times, if things get rocky, they run for the hills pretty effing fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's the polite way to say.
Yes, yeah. But, I don't want to get too far down the bank road.
Yeah.
But like, they could have worked with you. They kind of chose not to. And they just kind of like, were like, here's yeah. a death blow, bro. And you were like, but we could work together. And okay.
Yeah.
So
if,
a lot of
if
that.
If only some different decisions had been made, I think the outcome would be different.
Could've
and
been.
And obviously, I you know, in hindsight, there are different decisions I could have made, taking less risks, doing things differently. Like, but all of that is kind of Monday morning quarterbacking at this point. Mm-hmm. We made the decisions at the time with the information we had at the time, and I promise you, they were sound and logical at that time, given what we knew. You know, there was no way to know. I mean, 31% of the craft distilleries in the United States have closed in the last 12 months, and the next 12 are likely to be worse. Mm. So we're not talking about a correction so much as an almost extinction level event for an industry. Craft beer is yeah. facing a similar headwind. Wineries are closing regularly, and this will all work out. It's not like craft you know, alcohol is over, but there's way too many people now cutting into a pie that is getting smaller, and we have to correct for that.
Yeah.
The only other point I will make to that, we've gone through these corrections before. You know, Rochester's craft beer scene has had openings and closings. I think it just got even more overheated with COVID, and now we're watching a lot of people close simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So this will all work out, but we're talking about a 60 to 70% reduction in the number of craft distilleries in the nation.
Incredible.
And therefore, I guess I'm in good company with losing mine.
So the missing 18 minutes mostly covered the topics of the bank and your health. There's a third and a fourth thing that we want to try and cover here. We don't have a ton of time today, but the third thing is, what has happened to Black Button since the new owners came in, which there's a lot there. And then the fourth thing is, what are you personally doing in the future? So that has to come last, because yeah, it doesn't make sense without the thing before it. But would you rather start talking about the health issues that you encountered that we got to talk about, because it's like a miracle you're even here? Or would you rather talk about what has happened to Black Button in the last couple of months?
I think we can do both. We can probably, you know, do the health one fairly succinctly.
Okay.
Which is that, you know, 2 weeks before my daughter was born, I went to see my general practitioner. I just had a thirst I could not quench. You know, drink a glass of water, pour another one. And when you start realizing that all of a sudden you're drinking like gallons and gallons a day, something's not right. So they run some tests. They say, hey, come back, we got to run some more tests. And, you know, they basically say, your enzyme levels and numbers have changed so much in the time it took us to run the two tests that we are very, very concerned that you are broken and we can't fix you. Like this, you know, this is in my career, I've never seen someone's numbers rising at this speed. You know, we're certainly happy to try, but you're going to be going into the hospital and you don't need to park a car. You may not be getting out of it.
When was this?
This was 2 weeks before my daughter Charlotte was born.
That's 2020 or?
Yep. This is August of 2020.
August of 2020. For context, where is Black Button at that time as a business?
We're doing about $7 million in revenue. We've got about 80 staff. Okay. We've just, you know, done the whole hand sanitizer, 20-hour days, 6 days a week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that has just wrapped up because the hand sanitizer craze kind of ended in July. And then we were headed into, you know, the fall where the liquor business gets busy.
And your firstborn is 2 weeks away.
Right.
And the doctors have just told you, you might not be alive to see it.
That I might not be alive to see her first Christmas.
Okay.
So that I've got, you know, they're now starting to measure things in weeks.
Oh my God.
And they are, you know, they're going to try, you know, very strict diet changes, lots of injections, lots of pills. But like at the rate you are climbing, this is probably not a correctable event.
And this is never new. Like, you don't tell anyone this. I don't remember hearing about this.
Oh, no.
This.
I didn't even tell my staff.
And you were Black Button was always in the news, yep, right? You always in the headlines. You were always in the headlines. And, like, this is just a giant secret that you are like, oh, my God.
Yeah, again, I mean, even I just disappeared. Mm-hmm. Like, my staff, I mean, there are certain benefits to being the owner, and we had enough of a thing put together. But I put up an out-of-office, went to the hospital, and, like, didn't answer my phone. And I don't mean this to be rudely, but if I didn't solve this, it really wasn't my problem what happened. Mm-hmm. And I had faith that my staff would figure it out. But
did you put anything in writing or record anything anywhere that if this did go the wrong way and you didn't make it to Christmas, that somebody was going to get some instructions on what to do next? Or you had your mom at that time?
I mean, my mom was working in the business.
Okay.
We made out a will that walked through all the legal stuff so that my wife and, you know, soon to be child would be taken care of.
Yeah.
And we certainly had discussions about, you know, and it was actually fairly simple. The instructions to the CFO, my mom, was, you know, if I don't make it, sell the company. Mm-hmm. Just find out what you can get for it. Go see if Constellation will buy it. If they won't, go see somebody else. But I mean, I'm the head of sales. I'm the head of quality. I've got a master distiller, you know, my partner, Jeff, who's doing a great job, but like, again, still there to support him a lot. So they're really, you know, Black Button and me were very intertwined, and therefore it just was hard at the time to fathom it being able to go on without that leadership. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would have. I'm glad we didn't have to find out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and organizations and organisms do have a great way of responding. You know, when a resource goes away, they often can cover it. But it was hard to imagine at that time.
Yeah.
And I mean, also my wife, you know, it was not her dream to like own a distillery. She's willing to join me in my dream. But, you know, if this didn't work out, you know, her selling the distillery and having whatever money that is and hopefully no pressure and then being able to raise our kid, you know, seemed like the right answer.
Yeah. So, By the way, I would make the same decision right now. We have talked about it in very private moments, and I don't know if I should be talking about it or not, but I've told my wife before, you know, she said, well, what would I do? What would you want me to do? My answer is the same as yours.
Yeah.
Like, just sell it. Just,
yeah,
fine. I don't want this for you.
Like, right. Find somebody mm-hmm. else that has that passion, that wants to lead the employees, that mm-hmm. where it's a exciting thing rather than an obligation.
Yeah. Because the other thing we're dealing with all the time, I mean, you were actually facing the Reaper in that moment, but I mean, you're always facing, I mean, I'm driving a car every day.
Right.
Down the highway. It's possible.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, it's possible that just one day.
Yeah. Oh, you get on a Southwest flight and you're just like, ooh, is this going to work?
All right. Okay. So, obviously you're here today, so
yeah.
This works out okay. Do you want to talk about also the birth of your daughter and complications there?
We can talk about that for a minute. I mean, people,
I can't believe how much stuff landed on your lap at this time.
Yeah. So people often ask, I get very fervorish about Golisano Children's Hospital, and very passionate about helping, you know, get money for the, raise money for the incredible doctors and nurses and staff that are just doing these wonderful things. And it's mostly driven by my wife and mine's experience in August of 2020. So, you know, I'm 2 weeks out from my diagnosis, you know, got all my own, you know, PICC lines and everything. My wife's in the hospital giving birth to our daughter. It's a very difficult birth. Labor was over 24 hours. They're talking about, you know, possibly having to go in to get her. The baby's, you know, in distress. And then all of a sudden, as some times happens, you know, the baby's coming very quickly. So the baby comes out, you know, my wife, is now hemorrhaging blood. They're calling codes and, you know, people are rushing in. She has actually passed out from the blood loss. And all of a sudden there's a doctor pulling on my arm. The baby's not breathing. We have to go.
Jesus.
And that, you know, and the doctor's like, stay here with your wife. You know, we'll be back. No. My wife and I have talked about this. She does not want the baby switched. You know, by accident, I need to follow the baby. Also, my wife's a full adult. The baby is 2 minutes old. Yeah. We don't have time to argue. I am coming with you.
Yeah.
So they rush my daughter at, you know, again, 2-3 minutes old, running, you know, in a nurse's arms down the corridor of the third floor of the hospital to the emergency room at the Golisano NICU, where they do emergency surgery and vacuum out Charlotte's lungs from having, she had swallowed too much meconium. And they are able to get her heart and lungs started.
Oh, thank God. What a miracle.
But, I mean, minutes matter.
Yeah.
And now she is in the NICU room. She's hooked up to all these tubes. You know, it's almost midnight, but, you know, it's been 8-9 hours before she is settled. And all of a sudden realize I don't have my phone. And my wife, I don't know if Steph's alive. And I don't know if Steph knows that the baby's alive. And so I, like, in the middle of the night, wander back to the birthing center to luckily find out that my wife has also lived through the day. And now, you know, we're in seeing Charlotte, you know, every day. You know, they've got visiting hours and, you know, seeing whether she's going to hit her milestones. And, you know, most days go well and some days there's setbacks. And finally at, you know, like day 5, we're able to take her home. Where, you know, they, and even that's like a very memorable experience. You know, my wife comes down in a wheelchair, you know, we're fumbling with the straps because we, you know, hadn't like pre-loosened the straps. This very nice nurse helps us get the baby into the car. I get my wife into the car and I'm sitting in the driver's seat and I look back. Wait, is that it? Is there not an instruction manual, a class?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I read the book, but
yeah.
But now what?
We're just in charge now, this person? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you just give out babies? What's this about? So, but again, it's the middle of 2020. Her lungs have been damaged because of the challenge. And like, again, one of the scariest things, you know, in the NICU, the doctors look at us and they're like, I need you to look me in the eye. I need you to understand she cannot get the flu. She cannot get COVID. This baby cannot get sick till she is 3 years old. That is how long it's going to take before the scar tissue and everything. And at this point, she's a healthy, precocious 5-year-old. No, you know, they've done all the scans. She's good.
Oh my God.
But now in the middle of COVID, we're basically told this kid cannot get COVID.
She can't leave the house. She can't leave her bedroom. And you're going out into the world. You're seeing people. You don't know what you're bringing home. That is so scary,
right,
dude.
So my wife ends up quitting her job to stay home with the baby, which had not been the original plan. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we go to like DEFCON 5 on, you know, I get home, go into the garage, strip down, you know, hop in the shower. Masked the whole time, didn't fly on a plane for a long time, like, you know, drove places because it was safer than, I mean, you reorient your life around making sure this works. And so it was a huge thing at her third checkup when they were like, okay, she's good, she can now get the flu. And we're like, oh, great, she can go to daycare, and now we just all get sick all the time.
Oh my God, but, what a miracle.
Yeah, this
Charlotte,
is,
right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Charlotte.
And so this is our August 2020 and fall 2020 experience.
When do you finally get a clean bill of health for yourself? Like, when do they say, you're going to live, Jason?
It took probably about a year before they figured it all out through this cocktail of daily, weekly, and, you know, intermittent injections, and then a whole cocktail of pills. Mm-hmm. And I still have to see somebody every 90 days. But at this point, you know, I mean, the doctors, again, were kind of surprised. You know, they just flood the zone with all these like ways that it'll make changes, trying to just buy time at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, right around the Thanksgiving mark, they're kind of like, this is actually working like better than we expected. Like, maybe it's now not Christmas. Maybe it's now, you know, Easter. Maybe it's now the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. And you really do start to look at life a little differently when people are starting to count the days, weeks, or months. You know, we all think we have 50 years, 60 years. You got to think about a lot of things when it's like, oh, this might or might not or maybe. And again, I know they don't know. They call it practicing medicine for a reason. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, having a doctor read your chart and being like, oh, well, this is like good. You're not like totally tanking. Thanks. What does that mean? You know, and again, they're like, oh, these numbers are up. Is up bad? No, up of these numbers is good. Can we have context for this, please? Like, could we just use a traffic light signal, you know, green, yellow, red?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank God.
Yeah. So at this point, the enzymes, I still get my blood tested every 30 days. I see a doctor every 90 days. But we seem to have found a fairly steady system. On a plus side, my numbers are actually way better in the last month.
Mm.
Because stress is an aggravating factor for this disease. And as you can imagine, this has been a stressful year. So on a good news front of all of this, I am way less stressed than I was 45 days ago. And I literally have numbers to prove it.
You have just provided a wonderful transition into the second half of the conversation, which is that the last we left off, and just again, to clue in the listeners, everything that you've just heard, we did originally talk about in that podcast, but it had to get chopped out for various reasons. Now we're going to move into something that at that time wasn't even really known yet.
Yeah, it wasn't even really known. Yeah.
Which is the last we've heard publicly was, hooray, Black Button has been sold. It is being saved. And you are here to tell us what has happened since the last we heard.
Oof.
Take your time. This is hard.
Middle of October, I got asked to step into the conference room by one of the new owners. He had gathered the whole staff and, you know, fine. We're going to have a weekly meeting or figure something out. And he let us know that we were all let go. And that it was effective like right now. You know, not finish out the week, not finish out the day. Like, go to your desk, grab the photos that belong to you, and you are out of here. And the staff looked at me, and I think could tell from the look on my face that I was learning about this in real time as they were. And that was the end of that. And so, unfortunately, I don't know what the new owner's plans are. It is their right. I mean, they bought the assets. They are allowed to do with those assets as they please. I respect all that. Mostly, I'm actually surprised that they let the staff go. I'm not totally surprised. You know, you can't have two captains of a ship. It's kind of weird. I was the guy that was there. But you know, the first few weeks had gone pretty well. There hadn't been a lot of animosity. You know, again, we were just explaining, this is how we make the stuff. This is how we do the stuff. So it was really quite a surprise, you know, and I wish I knew what their plans for the brand are, but
could I just interject real quick, because it's important what you say, because I don't think a lot of people will realize that what you just said is very true, that when a business gets bought, a lot of times the original founder or the owner is kept on for a small period of time,
sure,
like for a transitional period of time. But there are many, many stories where the new company eventually wants them out, because
sure,
it's two captains of one ship. Sometimes it can be amicable and planned out. We're going to do 12 months. We're going to do 24 months. So that's not abnormal. But the entire staff,
yeah,
that's a big shocker.
Yeah.
Also, it was pretty quick too. You know.
Just a few weeks. This is the middle of October.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only challenge of getting rid of the entire staff is there's a lot of tribal knowledge. You know, there's passwords that are on post-it notes in people's desks, and you know, just how do you operate a place where you, without that tribal knowledge? Like, think of when an employee leaves, how much work it is to cover that position.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine if you're doing, but you're covering with other people that worked with them or had seen them do it or know something about it. I just don't know what the plans are, because those weren't shared with me. But I mean, the guys that made the stuff, the folks that sold the stuff, the brave men and women that manned accounting are all gone. And almost all of them have now found new jobs. I've stayed in touch with many of them, made recommendations, gotten to serve as a reference. Like, I mean, especially the last nine, you know, the mighty nine, I guess I would say, you know, they stuck through all of it, through the challenges, all the way, you know, all these challenges with the bank. And I think that's what even makes some of this so much harder, is that they were getting excited again.
Yeah.
You know, here had been this big announcement. There was going to be this investment. We're going to take Black Button to multiple states. We're going to turn everything back on. We're going to hire back some of our former coworkers who have left. And then to have that all just be blindsided, ripped away, was probably one of the hardest things to watch. And again, you know, with no real understanding of it, made it very hard on those people. And then, of course, you know, well, why did I waste the last 6 months? Why did I put all this effort into trying to save something that ultimately I didn't even get to be a part of? You know, it was very hard on each of those folks. And that's a real bummer, because I just don't think it needed to be.
I want to throw you an open-ended question, because we're friends, so I know a little bit more than I am letting on, I guess, about all of this and how it all went down and behind the scenes. There's some stories, some of them frustrating, some of them funny. Is there anything at all that you want to or can share about interacting with these people to whom you sold your business and then pulled the rug out from under you? Or are you like, you know what, let me just leave it there? It's completely up to you.
I think we probably ought to leave it there. Again, okay. I want to be respectful of the fact that this was well within their right. It's not the decision I would have made, but they bought these assets. They get to do with those assets as they see fit. And I wish them well. And I said that to somebody the other day, and they're like, no, you don't, Jason. And I was like, no, I actually do. You know, I put a lot of time and effort into building this brand and building this company. And sure, I'm not there to helm the ship, and it's not necessarily going the way I thought it would, but I hope it goes well for them, because I don't wish anyone ill. And that, you know, that part of my life is now over, and now it's time to figure out what comes next.
Okay, so what comes next is the big thing, but I have one last question about this part, and I assume maybe you just want to go with yes, no, or I don't know, but by all means expand if you'd rather expand. Is Black Button operational in Rochester today? And we're recording this on Wednesday, November 5th.
Not to the best of my knowledge.
Okay.
Is probably the best way to say it. But again, I don't really know.
Yeah. Okay.
It's been very weird. I was talking to somebody the other day, haven't been to the plant in weeks, considering that I basically lived there as I built it.
So weird.
And then was there, you know, 6+ days a week as we ran it. It's you know, very bizarre to say I have not been to that building in weeks and weeks. But
by the way, you join the likes of is it Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
Famous founders who have been fired from their own companies.
Yeah.
So it's you and Steve Jobs. You got that in common, right?
There we go. That and our fashion sense.
Yeah,
and,
that's right. But there is. I mean, if you Google founders have been fired from their own companies, there's a pretty long list.
Yep.
I mean, it happens. And
yeah.
God knows it'll probably happen to me one. Now, honestly, I hope it happens to me someday. I hope somebody comes here, buys this joint out, and tells me to go home. You know, I mean, not in the same way. I'm not comparing the stories, but...
Say, hopefully they can at least have a party and you can do it as a fond send-off.
Yes,
but yeah,
yes,
I mean,
yes.
Again, there are a lot of opportunities for them to build on the foundation that was laid, and I hope they do a great job with it.
So let's get into the future then.
Yeah.
So Mr. Unemployed Jason Barrett, it's been a long time since you were just like, oh, geez.
Yeah, I'm haven't free. Been on a job interview in like 15 years. I also think it's interesting as the owner of the company, you don't get unemployment.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's a problem for me too. That just adds to my stress.
Yeah. If this all goes sideways, you get a W-2, you get unemployment. K-1's no unemployment.
Just got to find a job.
And that'll be fine. I mean, again, my wife and I have been preparing for this for a long time, have a very supportive family. I had a college roommate who called and, you know, was like, you know, do you need me to send you grocery money? And it was one of the sweetest things that somebody's ever offered. And I'm very blessed that we're not in that position. And obviously there are lots of people in our community today that are struggling with that. Mm-hmm. So overall, I'm just starting to figure out what I'm going to do. My first plan is to do some consulting, working with other excited entrepreneurs in the Rochester area or in the distilling industry, trying to leverage the knowledge and learn from the mistakes that I've made so they don't have to repeat the ones that I've made. And then, I've also kind of got this idea for like an entrepreneurial community. And what I mean by that, when I lived in Maryland, they had all of these like industrial, like flex spaces, small bay warehouses, 1500 square feet, a little 10 by 10 office, a little bathroom. And they're very cost effective, but you can run a lot of different businesses out of them, be it a small e-commerce shop, pottery studio, maybe a small CrossFit gym. But because they're so cost effective, they make it easy for small businesses to operate in them and be, again, successful. If you're paying $10,000 a month in rent, you've really got to cover a lot. Well, what if that rent could be $1,500? And so now, again, people either starting things at night or on the weekends, sometimes people use them to store classic cars or their boats or to run a small repair shop. And they were all over in Maryland, and I haven't seen a ton of them in Rochester. But in being very honest, that this is not a brand new idea, they built one in Candegua, where I live, and I watched it go up in about 2 months as I drove by every day. And then once it was built, it like filled up in like a week.
Yeah.
Like every unit was full.
I believe it.
So I'm wondering if there's opportunities to, to again, form a community. And the way I mean by that is, what are the things that would make entrepreneurs really successful? So, does every individual location have to have its own Wi-Fi, or could we just have Wi-Fi for the whole building? Do we have, can we get discounts at like CPA firms and law firms that work with small businesses that are in this? Can we make it, not just a place that they rent, but a place where they can thrive? And I think I would do really well working with other entrepreneurs and helping talk through their business challenges. And so that's why I think the consulting and literally building like a space where, 100 small businesses could operate, could be really something I could get passionate about.
Are you familiar with, there's a couple things I want to ask you're familiar with. First of all, there's the, you remember WeWork?
Yeah.
WeWork, by the way, great, great show. We crashed.
Yeah.
If you have watched that,
it's just, on my watch list.
You told me you got some time on your hand these days.
I do.
Maybe,
for an unemployed guy, I'm shockingly busy.
Really? I imagine. You're a popular guy. So there was WeWork, and then also in Rochester, there's the commissary downtown, which is like a shared kitchen space. I don't even have much in the terms of office space, but shared kitchen. So
it's the same idea. Yeah, okay. Like what WeWork is doing for offices and what the commissary is doing for food businesses, I think this is just an opportunity to do it for like people that need industrial space.
I love
it. So like, again, if you were going to run a pottery studio,
yes,
you can't run it at the commissary, and you don't need, you know, it's a little hard to run it out of your garage. You know, how do you get a big truck in there? Also, you know, you might want to park in there. But if you have to sign a lease for $10,000 a month, you got to sell a lot of pottery.
Mm-hmm.
Or again, a CrossFit gym where, you know, maybe you have a 9-to-5, you want to do this nights and weekends, you only need to be able to host 20 people.
Yes.
You need a higher ceiling, you need to be able to have those big tires. And maybe it's just weird having people come to your house.
I like where you're going with this. I just interviewed it hasn't come out yet, but I just interviewed Andy Galina, and it'll be out in a couple of weeks. But he talked about before he really got into the downtown, the high rises, he was doing a lot of flex space, building a lot of flex spaces. And a little bit of a similar idea. However, what you're talking about is really sharing more resources and lowering the overhead cost for all of these entrepreneurs, which I think is the brilliant part of this. He was more talking about where he was splitting buildings into fifths, you know, he might build 50,000 square feet, split into 10,000, but then basically pay me the rent and, you know, do what you will with those 10,000.
Right.
You're more saying a little bit of that. Yeah, do what you will with your square footage, but also let's share a bunch of resources. I think it's great.
Well, and like, again, let's get a group together and have a CPA in January and a lawyer in February and a marketing consultant in March, and you know, everybody can come over, and I mean, totally optional. You can just rent the space, go home, do what you want to do. But again, I think there are people in the community that would be happy to share their knowledge.
Totally.
And when it's stuff you've done, some of this isn't that crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I had a friend that wanted to start an Amazon business, and I get talking to her about it, and she's like, "Oh, but I got to get an LLC, and I got to do this, and I got to do that." And I just wrote her a one page. Like, call this guy, he'll set you up with a business banking account. Call this lawyer for $400, they'll set you up with an LLC. Call this guy, you'll go get insurance. And she's kind of like, how do you know all this? I'm like, well, I've just done it a bunch of times. And when you know the people to call, it's not that crazy. And I'm not saying that the banker I recommended is the best bank, but they're a great one and a local one. And if you're just trying to get started, just get a business banking account. Because I feel like that's what holds people back, is they don't know how to take that first step.
Totally. Yes.
And if we could help them take that first step and again, lower that barrier to trial, I think you make it a lot easier for people to then succeed. How many people, if they could put a little plan together that said, I could start my CrossFit thing on nights and weekends while I keep my day job. You know, I can acquire the large tires and I can acquire the fire hoses we're going to throw around and a car we're going to drag. CrossFit's just insane to me. But if they could start that while working and then build up enough of a clientele that they then felt comfortable transitioning from their day-to-day to running that full-time, you know, they may not stay with us forever. I mean, even that's an interesting question I've just started to think through.
Yeah.
Obviously, as a landlord, you want as long of leases and as stable of leases as possible. But if the goal of this is almost to graduate people out, you either need to have different size spaces so people can scale up, or you basically have to say, listen, you know, come and talk to us. Tell us that your CrossFit studio has exceeded the space we've got. And if we can't help you find it, then help us backfill that position. We'll sign a new lease with that new tenant. And now all of a sudden you can move on. Because so much of this stuff is so structured. You sign a one-year lease. The likelihood that your business or even your personal life just happens to work out for that 1 year, what about 10 months? What about 14 months? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying there might not have to be some cost to this, but again, if you look at it as a community and a way to work with people, you know, if all of a sudden the CrossFit studio is moving out, but the pottery studio next door wants to expand, well, great, let's cut a hole in the wall, rent it to the pottery studio, and you know, have the CrossFit guys just tell everybody how great it was to start at this entrepreneurial, you know, place and now graduate.
I think it's great. I know you got to go. We're time capped here, but thank you for spending this time. Thanks for coming back.
Happy to.
The last episode was so good, but there was sort of a cliffhanger. I recorded an outro. I think you know about it, right? Where I said like, oh, Jason has
since... Between when we recorded it and when it went out, a lot changed.
A lot changed. Yeah.
We had to figure out how... So I'm glad we're able to to give folks some resolution on some of that.
So thank you. And I know I'm looking at the clock and I know you got to go, but again, I can't thank you enough for spending as much time as you did here today. Cause we talked a lot before we recorded this and I'm going to put this out. I'll send it to you. I'll send it to your representatives first for vetting, but
have my people look it over.
Have people look it over, but best of luck to you. I love the idea. Let me know how I can help as you go forward, and hopefully we'll talk in a lot more in the future.
Sounds like a plan, Paul.
Thank you, bro.
I'm Matt Knotts.
And I'm Chris Lindstrom. And we are the co-founders of the Lunch at Orr Podcast Network, your home for amazing and wide-ranging podcasts in Rochester.
With shows like Anomaly Presents, Behind the Glass, the Level Up Coffee Podcast, Punches and Popcorn, Just Can't Not, and of course, Food About Town, we celebrate the people, places, and things that make Rochester a fantastic place to live.
We have more shows joining the network soon and offer remote and in-person recordings and video too. We're excited to bring distinct and diverse voices together on one network.
Follow Lunch at Orr on social media to catch new episodes as soon as they release, and stay tuned for exciting news about new shows and how to support them. Lunch at Orr, celebrating Rochester's creativity through the magic of podcasting.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch at Orr Podcast Network.